When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Friend, how are you? How has your week been? How are you doing? I hope you are well. If you are not well, do not worry. We cannot be well at all times. I'm Louise McSharry and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the podcast where I try and keep you in the loop, basically. Keep you updated on what's going on in the news, what's going on in entertainment, and what's going on with just interesting people who are doing interesting things. And you may know that on Mondays we talk about news, on Wednesdays we talk about entertainment, and on Fridays we do an interview. So this Friday interview is with Pastiche, who is an emerging musical artist here in Ireland. She makes brilliant pop music, and I first came to know her just through her music, and I saw her at Collins Barracks at Culture Club, the Mother Culture Club event last year, and we met and had a chat, and I, you know, really liked her. But I was so interested to see that recently she's been sharing her experience with egg freezing, despite the fact that she is only 26 years old. She is freezing her eggs as a result of endometriosis, and she's been so open about her experience with endometriosis, the challenges she had with getting to a diagnosis, what that actually means, how that impacts her life, and then now what it's like to be freezing your eggs at 26. And I thought, I really want to talk to her about that stuff, because I feel like these are experiences that we don't hear enough about. And she is brilliant. She's just like such a bright spark. She's so direct and straight, you know, kind of clear about these things and about her feelings and the experiences that she's had. I really, really enjoyed having this conversation with her, and I really hope that you do too. Stick around for some recommendations at the end. Okay. Well, Pastiche, it is so nice to meet you again. I know I met you very briefly last year. It was actually a year ago, wasn't it? Because it was Culture
Collins
Club.
Barracks.
Yeah.
Yes. Collins Barracks. Yes. I think I saw you in the crowd and I ran up and I was like, oh my God, hi.
It was really nice to meet you. I had just seen you perform. I thought you were amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So for people who aren't familiar with you and your music, maybe just give a little bit of background. Where are you from? How old are you? I wouldn't normally mention someone's age, but you are very young. So that's relevant to our conversation. And what are you working on at the moment?
So I'm Pastiche. I'm a pop artist. I am born and bred Malahide, Northsider, through and through. Although people sometimes say Malahide doesn't belong in the North Side, but adjust.
Why? Because it's
yeah,
posh.
Yeah, people are like, oh, it's so posh. I'm like,
excuse me, there are lots of posh places on the north side.
I know. It's
how
very
dare they?
Yeah. But I'm a pop musician. I've been releasing music since COVID. I went to BIM in Dublin. And I wanted to finish up my studies and get my thesis in. And then I was like, right, I'm going to give music a shot. I'm just going to go for it. And then the pandemic hit. And I was like, oh, crap. Yeah. The whole industry just shut down.
And you were, I mean, what were you, like 21, 20?
I'm currently 26. So I would have been 22.
Yeah.
Yeah, around that time.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, like, you bring up age, because even I thought, oh my God, I'm so late to the game starting. Do you know what I mean? loser. But
are we all? Think
I know
that,
we
though?
All think that, don't we?
Yeah, like I started working in radio when I was 20, and I remember being 23, and like all my friends were going traveling after college and stuff. Yeah. And I'd been working.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, I can't leave because I mean, I've started my career, I'll never get back in, and like, you know, I'm so old now.
Yeah, it's funny, crazy. And then you think 5 years later, you're like, oh, girl, you don't know what's coming.
Exactly.
You know
what I mean?
But yeah, so then I kind of took that summer. I was working in retail at the time, just, you know, paying my way, and I had no work. I was off, so I just started working on music with my friends from college, and then booked a show by myself. I had no manager, no book. I didn't even know how it worked, to be honest. And started releasing music, and then it kind of just slowly built from there. Yeah, it's great. Like, I did my bit on the Irish music scene, which is a really fun scene to be a part of. It's such a community. I've met so many amazing people. And then I've had amazing opportunities. Like, I've played the Olympia last year. I got to play Collins Barracks. I played Primavera Pro. I played Iceland Airwaves, you know, and it's just been a bit of a wild ride. And it's kind of like, I've been doing it and just been like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just having a good time.
Well, that's good. And I mean, like, from what I hear, obviously I'm not a musician, but I have a lot of friends who are musicians, and it seems like the Irish music scene is so inclusive, and there's a real sense of community, and everybody wants to support each other. But it is quite hard to kind of make a living as a musician these days, isn't it?
Very difficult. Yeah, very difficult. Like, I don't do it full time. Like, any musicians I know that are even in my circle, like, we do music and we call ourselves musicians, but we all have our hustles on the side, because I mean, someone has to pay for the music.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an independent artist. So, and I completely understand that, like, I have to invest in myself for anyone else to invest in me. So, you know, I invest my money in myself, any money I make from shows or music or anything, royalties and stuff, which is great, goes straight back into to my music. And I'm hoping someday I get to make, you know, a living off of it and get to just tour and have a great time. But you know, in the meantime, it's just like the amount of opportunities that I've had during this time, I'm just going with the flow.
Yeah.
Having a good time.
Well, good for you. I mentioned to you there just when you arrived that I was just having a quick look at your TikTok, and there's two very different stories happening on your TikTok at the moment.
I know. Stop. Oh my God.
But I love that you're putting it all out there, because obviously there's Pastiche Pop Queen and you're releasing new music and it's all very exciting. But then you're also going through this very real kind of biological thing at the moment.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So back in November, sorry, I have an eye twitch and it's very...
Okay, well, don't worry. I'm not noticing
it. Kind of like...
Yeah, no, don't worry. You're all good.
Back in November, at the age of 25, I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis after a very, very rough year. I'd probably say one of the worst years probably of my life. I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis. And because of that, I was told I needed to freeze my eggs immediately because I run a real risk of not being able to have kids in the future. Because my endometriosis is basically everywhere. Like, name an organ, it's got it.
And for people who might not be familiar with endometriosis, what does that mean?
So endometriosis is a disease where lining similar to the lining of your uterus is found outside of the uterus.
Right.
So that makes it sound like it's a very menstrual-centric disease. That is a myth. It actually isn't. It a lot of the symptoms can tie back to your menstrual cycle, but it can be so much more than that. You can get bowel endometriosis. You can get a bladder endometriosis. You can get endometriosis on your diaphragm. It's been found on people's lungs and brain.
And how was it presenting for you? Like, what made you first go and get it checked out?
Well, the crazy thing is, in Ireland, it takes about 7 to 10 years to get diagnosed, which is crazy for something that is as common as diabetes. 1 in 10 women have endo. So when I was 12, I started my periods and they were so heavy, heavy, painful, like just a bit insane. It got to a point, I missed 2 weeks of school because I was in so much pain. and just bleeding. And my mom brought me to the doctor, obviously, and the doctor was just like, oh, just go on the pill. It'll sort itself out. And I mean, you trust your doctor. And you're like, of course, I'll just do that. So I was put on the pill. And you know, when like you're 12, 13, you're like, guys, I'm on the pill.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so adult. So I was delighted with myself. Do you know what I mean? Not that I was going to fucking do anything. But so then I kind of just sailed through. But I still had, even on the pill, I still had bad periods.
So it did help.
It definitely alleviated the, like, I could function. Mm-hmm. But I still had bad periods. But I think it's also important to remember, like, we only know what's normal to us.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that that's what periods felt like for everyone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I do.
When you're learning about your period in school, you're not told all these things. You're kind of just told, so this happens because you're meant to have a baby. Mm. You know, and the boys aren't even in the room. I don't know if that's the case anymore.
Yeah. But I mean, I think they're working on it.
Yeah. But it's just a very shun thing. Like, we don't want to talk about it. Like, I remember even being told, oh, you don't need to wear a tampon when you go swimming because you just don't bleed. Like, I remember being told that.
I think what's upsetting to me is that, like, you know, I'm, sorry, carry the two. I'm 15 years older than you. And I just would have assumed that in those 15 years that would have improved. But this is only 10 years ago. Like,
It's bloody nuts. But so I kind of just sailed through then. I ended up in A&E a few times with pains. They told me, oh, probably a birth cyst. Just gave me some, you know, Tylex and sent me home, or sometimes not even painkillers, just Buscopan. So I've actually been told, like, oh, you just had a bit of wind.
Wow.
Which is really horrible, because then when the pain would come back again, I wouldn't want to go to my doctor or anything, because I'd just be told, oh, I'm just being dramatic, I'm just clearly can't take the pain.
Yeah.
So then I was kind of just sailing through life, went to college, things was great, was working on music, and I was releasing my EP in May of 2022. And a lot of my friends, we were kind of at that age, we were like 24. A lot of them started to come off the pill after being on it for like 10 years and realizing they had a lot of issues. You know, some of my friends were diagnosed with like polycystic ovarian syndrome and just different kind of hormonal issues, thyroid things that were all come to light. And I was like, you know what? I've been on this for about 10 years. I kind of just want to give my body a break. So that's what I did. And probably wasn't the smartest decision, because I think I did it like the month before, like my big headline show, the Grand Social. And I was just, I don't know, I was just didn't think anything of it.
No, I mean, why would you? Yeah.
And then I was moving to London in the June. And so there was a lot of different, and like my kind of music career was on a real, real trajectory up. I was doing, I had an amazing manager, Laura McCabe, my bestie. And we were doing some really, really great things.
Yeah.
And that summer I had festivals and it was great. And so then all of these life changes happened and I noticed things starting to change. But I kind of put that on, oh, I've moved country.
I'm very busy, quite stressed,
you know. And those things never really went away. They got worse. And then I realized my periods weren't regular.
And when you say those things, like, what kind of things are we talking?
So yeah, so like my periods weren't regular.
Yeah.
I started to get acne. Never suffered with my skin my entire life, which I'm very lucky. Hair loss.
I was actually literally just sitting here thinking, she has gorgeous
skin.
Oh,
thank you.
Genuinely.
I have a massive cyst on my chin, but makeup.
Yeah.
Acne, hair loss. I started getting male pattern balding on my head, which is very weird. It's a weird, I didn't even notice it really. Weight gain, bloating, mood swings, pain. And then I started getting like these pains on my periods were getting worse and worse. Every month it was just getting worse. Fatigue. And then also I was getting pain not on my period. I was getting these, I call them cramp attacks, where I could just be doing anything and out of nowhere it feels like a gunshot has gone off inside me. Kind of what I imagine your appendix bursting is like. And I was like, okay, this isn't right. So I went to the doctor. And they were just like, oh, okay, well, maybe it's PCOS because you had a birth cyst that one time. And I was like, no, literally, I know. And I was like, okay. And they're like, oh, and like your family history of it, so it's probably just that.
Yeah.
It's like, cool, so what do I do? And they're like, oh, we'll run some blood tests and stuff. You know, do some blood tests, grand. Yeah, so like you don't really have crazy high like male hormones and stuff, but like probably it's PCOS. And I was just like, this is... they were doing all these tests on me, and then they were like making me do like STI checks and all this stuff. And I was like, we're completely going past the main issue here. Like I'm really fatigued. It's interfering with my life now.
Yeah.
I'm in bed, you know, a week of the month because I'm in so much pain. And even when I'm not on my period, I'm getting these cramps, and they're like, oh, is it IBS? It's just wind. And I was just like, here. So I pushed and pushed and pushed to get an ultrasound, and they refused. They told me there was nothing wrong with me.
How did you know to even push that?
Because I looked online.
Okay.
And of course, the minute you tell them, well, I've done some research, they go, oh, no, 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 don't listen to Google.
Yeah.
Don't go on Reddit. You know, what do they know? But in hindsight, I am so lucky I did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so lucky I did. But I pushed and I pushed. And this, we're talking in the span of months now.
Yeah.
Going back and complaining. And they were giving me all these different medications and stuff that weren't doing anything. Finally got my ultrasound, and they found that my left ovary was immobile.
Oh.
I didn't even know your ovaries were meant to be mobile. They're actually meant to like float around you, which is kind of nuts. Imagine like little jellyfish.
I have had two children and I didn't know that.
Exactly,
I'm ashamed of myself.
Yeah, but my left ovary was immobile. And so I went home and I was like, this is great. We have something here. And
then
I
kind of... An answer.
Yeah.
Because I have had that experience of being sick.
Yeah.
I called it my mystery illness, and the whole run up to my cancer diagnosis, it was over the course of like 7 or 8 months. And that feeling of like, come on, like, just give me an explanation.
Yeah.
And so any explanation then feels like, okay, great. We know what it is. Now we can deal with it.
Yeah. And I think for me, when you have like a mystery illness, or you know in yourself when there's something wrong. They see it as, oh, they're just chasing a diagnosis to label themselves. But in a sense, like, getting that diagnosis gives you so much clarity because you know. At least you know, no matter what it is, you know, and you can move forward.
You know what you're dealing with.
When you don't know, that's the worst part about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, this is great. I'll go to my doctor. Let's get a plan in place, whatever. And I Googled left ovary immobile. Found a little thing called endometriosis. And I was like, surely not. Like, I've heard of this before, but I thought it was something to do like with cysts in my case. But no, endometriosis. So I was like, okay. So I went back to my doctor and I brought it up to them. And I was like, yeah, so the left ovary is immobile. What's the possibility of endometriosis? And they were like, oh no, it's not that.
And just point blank.
No, point blank wasn't that, because they were like, if it was endo, we would have seen it on the scan. Which, again, completely untrue. It is very, very difficult to diagnose endometriosis from ultrasounds, MRIs, bloods. The only way to definitively diagnose endometriosis is through a laparoscopy, which is surgery, keel surgery. So they just shot me down straight away. And I was just kind of like, well, why? I remember saying, why do you think it's not that? And they were just like, well, you know, you don't have the symptoms of it. And I was like, I clearly do. And they were like, well, you know, go and make a log. So they made me go away for another 6 weeks and make a log of all my stuff. And again, they were just refused. They just kept putting me on the long finger. And they kept telling me, you know what? Like, why don't you just go back on the pill? Because you didn't have this issue when you're on the pill. And that is when I lost it. I was like, I am talking to a brick wall here. No one is taking me seriously. And it was really damaging to my mental health. Because through all this, this was in the span of about 8 to 9 months, all this was going on. Music went out the window. You know, like my career, my prospects went completely out the window because this was my life.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people who know me actually realize that and how much it affected my mental health. Because you think you're crazy.
Yeah.
You think you are nuts.
Yeah.
And you're thinking like, how can all my friends be, you know, in their 20s, going out to clubs and going to gigs and like going to work and then going straight out afterwards. I'm struggling to just get up and shower in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
I felt like when I was sick, I know it's not the same, but like when I was sick, one of the things that I did was I convinced myself that it was all in my head. And I had seen so many consultants at this stage. Like at this stage, I was seeing an infectious disease consultant, absolutely brilliant doctor, love him, and loved his team. They were brilliant. They're the people who eventually did diagnose me. But I was seeing him every week. And I still was like, nah, you're making this up.
Yeah.
I convinced myself I was making it up. And to the extent that I was like, this is just because you're fat. So if you get a personal trainer and you lose some weight, you're going to feel better. Mm-hmm. So I started going to a personal trainer and I went every week and three times a week. And I the weight started falling off me because my appetite completely disappeared. So I had no appetite whatsoever because I had cancer. But anyway, I had no appetite and I was exercising loads and everybody was like, oh my God, you look amazing. You look amazing. You look amazing.
That's just the worst part. Yeah.
And they were like, you must feel amazing. And I was like, no. And they were like,
worse probably.
Sure, yeah. They were like, surely right after you exercise, you feel great. And I was like, no, I feel terrible. Like I feel awful. And then I remember one day I went in and, I puked in the middle of the personal training session and I was like, I have to go. Like I have to go home. And then it was within the next couple of weeks that I got the diagnosis. Yeah. But like, that's how much I had convinced myself. Mm-hmm. Like I had stage 3 cancer. I was literally dying.
Yeah.
Like my appetite had gone. I wasn't eating like because my body was fighting so hard.
Yeah.
And yet because they couldn't figure it out and they were trying, like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying my doctors were trying. They really were.
There's a gaslighting.
You convince yourself that now my experience was not of being gaslit. Okay. I just want to be really clear about that because they were amazing. Sure. It was a hard diagnosis to get to without the right tests. That feeling of if they can't figure it out or like if they, you know, if they can't figure out what it is, then there must not be anything there. You know, I relate to that feeling of what's wrong with me? I'm crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so insane.
And in your situation, it's even, I think, more severe because you were being gaslit. Like you didn't
fully,
you know, you weren't being taken seriously and you were kind of being told to just medicate and ignore the fact that there was something going on.
Literally. And it's so funny the way you brought up weight as well, because from they go by BMI and all this absolute bullshit. Like, and I remember they were just like, you know, oh, well, you know, you're like, your BMI is really, really high. You should lose some weight and this could sort itself out. And so
was your body very different to the way it is now?
No.
Like, that is wild to me that they would say that to you.
Yeah. It's
BMI is just, you know, crazy.
It's like, that's a whole other conversation. But I remember then I was like, okay, maybe I'm the problem because I'm lazy and I'm, you know, the classic things in your head. Mm. And it's like, no, I'm not. I'm a very normal person, you know? And, I remember I was going to the gym 5 times a week. I counted every morsel of food that went in my mouth.
Yeah.
Didn't lose a thing. Do you know why? Because I have a chronic inflammatory disease that makes it very, very difficult. And then of course you go and they're like, well, what are you eating? One of the doctors made me sit and tell her every single thing that I would eat in a day.
Oh my God.
And then she presumed I was lying. It's insane. But basically that was going absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of a breakdown and like I was living in London and I remember I called my mom and I was like, I can't do this anymore. Mm. I don't. I think I'm going insane. Mm. I was like, do I have schizophrenia? Like, is everyone else do we live in a simulation? Yeah. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And she was like, look, remember that time they said you had a burst of ovarian cyst? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, there was a gyno that you went to. Why don't we just try and contact him? Because you're already in his books, kind of. And I was like, okay, but he's just going to tell me the same thing.
Mm.
So I came home. And I was like, I don't know. I kind of, in my head, I already set myself up for failure. I was like, they're not going to take me seriously.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's based on your experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I went in and I just said to myself, you know what? I'm going to come in with absolutely everything so they cannot tell me to go away and come back.
Yeah.
So I made a 14-page document.
Good for you.
With a log of my periods of the past year. Every single symptom, I had photo evidence, I had video evidence. I started filming myself during pain attacks just to show them.
Yeah.
And I remember I went in and he could tell from the minute I sat down, I was an angry lady.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't mean to take it out on him, but I just meant business, you know? And I made him sit and I made him go through every single thing. And he
all 14 pages.
Yeah. And then he just looked at me and he goes, you know, it's probably endometriosis, right? And the minute he said that, I was just like, thank you, Jesus.
Oh.
Thank you. Amen. Finally, someone, you know? And he didn't.
Did you feel annoyed or did you feel relieved?
I felt relieved that someone didn't think I was crazy.
Yeah.
But I also didn't want to believe him just yet because, yeah, again, from all my research, I knew what was coming.
Yeah.
And so he said to me, look, you need to either go on some type of birth control. And I just said, no, I don't. From looking online and stuff, it's an incurable disease.
Mm.
There is no cure. There is ways to help slow the progression or ways to treat it, but there's no cure for it. And so he said, right, well, if you're not going to go on like the pill or something, what we can do is we can basically send you into menopause where you get an injection and they put you into menopause. And I was like, okay, I'm 25 years old. I don't really want to go through bloody menopause.
Yeah.
And I was like, and my mom was kind of sitting beside me and I could tell she was about to be like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because we had known that the next thing was surgery. And I said, okay, well, if I still have the issues during the menopause, what do I do? And he goes, we go to surgery. And I just looked him dead in the face and I go, can we just skip to that step?
Mm.
And he knew in my eyes, I was done.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he goes, you know, I don't usually do this. But okay.
Okay.
And within 4 weeks, I had surgery.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. First of all, can we just take a moment for how well you advocated for yourself at 25 years old? Like, that is so impressive.
It was really tough.
Yeah.
Like, I even get emotional thinking about it. Like, it's...
The fact that you've been able to tell the story without getting upset is honestly very impressive to me, because that's a lot to go through, like, mentally, emotionally, physically. Like, you went through the ringer and then... Sorry, now I'm making you cry.
No, it's fine.
And then you advocated for yourself in such an incredible way. There's tissues just there if you want to grab one.
It's okay. I'm going to blink it on my makeup.
Okay. Your makeup is fabulous, so you shouldn't. But emotions are very welcome here, so don't worry about it. But yeah, the way that you advocated for yourself is so impressive. And I just think it's like, I've seen so many friends go through this, not your experience specifically, but go through the experience of having to fight for adequate medical treatment or to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And it is just so frustrating that you had to fight so hard.
Yeah.
But thank God you got there. And thank God that doctor took you seriously and recognized that you were talking about your body and your health.
Yeah. And I think the craziest thing was, you know, finding out, and this is my first time I ever had surgery or anything, and I was just kind of not even thinking about it. I was like, I'm just going into it, because you have to remember, I was still in the position of, we actually don't know for sure this is endo.
Yeah.
So for those 4 weeks while I was waiting to have my surgery, I had multiple breakdowns thinking, oh my God, have I just kind of jumped the gun a bit here?
Yeah.
Am I just being really dramatic? They're going to open me up. They're going to find nothing and I'm going to look like a bloody fool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember even the night before my surgery, I was just like, what have I done?
Mm.
Have I made a huge mistake here?
Mm-hmm.
That's the gaslighting.
Yeah.
That is everything. You know what I mean? So I went in for the surgery and I was so blessed. My mom was with me and she was, you know, I think in a really weird way, we were hoping to find something, nothing too bad.
Yeah.
But like a little stage one endo, you know, just to be like, grand, I'm not insane, but girl, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like we can sort you out. Then I woke up and I was in my bed, kind of out of it. My mom was beside me and I remember the surgeon walked up to us and he just looked me in the eye and he just goes, it's really bad. And I'm getting emotional thinking about it. The way he just looked at me.
Well, those are not three words that you want to hear from a surgeon after they've operated on you.
But the way he looked at me, and I was just like, you found endo. He goes, yeah, stage four. And I burst into tears of joy.
Yeah.
I was so happy, which is so weird to say.
It makes a lot of sense to me. I get it.
And then I turned to my mom, and my mom's in bits because she was like, wait, what? She was so shocked.
Yeah.
And he showed me the photos. I'll show you them after. Christ.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was everywhere. It was on my bowel, my bladder, my womb, my uterus, both ovaries, deep infiltrating.
Gosh, your poor body must have been working so hard. It was like cement.
It was like cement was poured into my pelvis.
Wow.
The image, because he showed me the images, and the only way I can describe it to like the listeners is, you know, on packets of cigarettes, how like those lungs look. That is what my insides look like. And I remember showing it to my friends being like, lads, can you believe this was inside me? This is my insides. And they were all just like, if you showed me that, I would think I had like 6 weeks left to live.
Yeah.
Like that is nuts, you know? And, you know, it's not a fatal disease.
Yeah. So let's, I mean, to be clear, what do the different stages of endometriosis, Jesus Christ.
It's hard.
What do the difference? I've said it a million times. I don't know why I'm struggling. It's the emotion. But what do the different stages mean? Is it in terms of where it's present?
So basically it's an interesting one. So the stages are divided for kind of where it's present, how deep infiltrating it is, and okay. how many spots there are.
Okay.
So when you see endometriosis on like a picture, they look like kind of little black spots.
Uh-huh.
And they can kind of form into almost like little webs
right.
that start kind of attaching to each other.
Okay.
So stage one is kind of, in quotes, the least severe.
Yeah.
However, your stage of endometriosis doesn't dictate your symptoms
right,
of endometriosis.
Yeah.
That's the craziest thing about this disease. You can be stage one and have the worst, have debilitating
yeah.
symptoms, the worst in the world. You could be stage four and not even know it.
Okay.
That is the craziest Sneaky. Part. So you know, if someone says they're stage one, it's not just to, oh, you're grand then.
Yeah,
they could yeah. still be really, really struggling.
Yeah, suffering,
So it's a very interesting way they scale it. But yeah.
So what were the next steps for you then? A surgery?
Yeah, so when they did the surgery, they did a mixture of extraction and ablation. So
they had done that already.
Yes, yeah, so when they go okay. into you, if they were like, if we find it, we will treat it. So yeah. Ablation is kind of when they laser it off.
Yeah.
And extraction is kind of ripping it from the root, which is the much better way to do it.
Yeah. But yikes.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. But
it's not nice to think about that happening inside your body. Yeah.
So he did as much as he could, but he told me he couldn't get it all. It was too deep.
Yeah.
So he extracted what he could. He lasered the other bits he couldn't, and there were some bits he just couldn't reach because it was so deep. So I was kind of the understanding, like, you know, this can come back.
Yeah.
This is progressive. This, you know, it's not uncommon for women to have multiple surgeries
yeah.
due to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what really surprised me the most was the, oh yeah, and you need to freeze your eggs conversation.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of like, wait, hold on. No, no, no. This is meant to be like the end of the story.
Mm.
I'm meant to be told, oh no, this is what you have, but we've done the surgery.
Yeah.
Here's, you know, something you can take to keep it at bay
yeah.
and we can all move on with our lives. And then little did I know.
It's worth, sorry, just to pause there for 1 second.
Yeah, of course.
It's worth saying as well that like you're, I presume you taking birth control wasn't stopping the endo from spreading, or it was just literally managing your symptoms.
It was masking my symptoms.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, absolutely, yeah, no,
yeah,
it doesn't
do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It masks your symptoms, and yeah. in some cases they do say that the coil helps stop the progression.
Mm.
But again, there's no real studies
yeah.
to fully prove that. I mean, there hasn't been any real groundbreaking stuff done in endometriosis since like the 70s.
Okay, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's still a loss of why it even happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to be clear about that in case people were
absolutely.
Confused about the yeah. purpose of the birth control in the whole context of this conversation.
Yeah.
So you're like, great, we're at the kind of, you know, the end for
yeah,
now.
It's like, I have my life back. Yeah. Let's go make some music.
And then they're like, no, honey.
Yeah. They're like, no, this is just the beginning. And I think this whole process has made me think like, you know, oh, once I get to this point, it'll be over.
Mm.
Or once I do this, I can move on.
Mm.
And I think I've slowly realized like, no, this is actually just my life now.
Mm.
And it's a little different than I imagined, but that's okay. You got to yeah. roll the punches and that's just where we are.
Yeah.
But I think coming to terms with that and the whole conversation of, oh yeah, and you need to freeze your eggs was just a lot.
Yeah. And when they said that to you, it's about the quality of your eggs, is it? Or the...
Yeah. yeah. So basically, yeah, that was a whole other thing that I didn't expect to do at 26,
mm.
you know. And the thing is as well, like after going through COVID in your 20s, I am mentally 17. Do you know what I mean?
yeah.
Like I am not,
yeah.
I'm not there, you know, because I went for the follow-up appointment and he was like, oh, so when are you planning on having kids? And I was like,
why are you talking?
Why are you asking that? I'm a minor. Like,
yeah.
I'm not. But I was just like, no, I don't know, not now. And he was like, oh, so not in like the next 1 or 2 years. I said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I'm a lady with some goals. You know, yeah. I want, not saying that you can't, but I want to really focus on yeah. my career. No,
it wasn't
stuff.
What you wanted it's at not that my time. Thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wasn't even sure if, when, or how I wanted kids.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, even that question
yeah.
is a lot to be considering
yeah.
at that age.
I was like, girl, I don't know where I'm going to be next week. Yeah. Never mind, you know.
Next year, yeah. yeah.
So, and then he just said, right, well, then we need to freeze immediately. And I was just like, oh, okay. And again, I had no idea what that process entailed. And so, yeah, then started all the fertility consultations and, oh, it's so weird. And I think what made it a bit more of an isolating process was that I don't know hardly anyone my age going through it.
No.
And so when I started kind of talking about it online, I was talking to a lot of people and they were all kind of in different situations in their lives, usually a little bit older than me.
So you found through talking about it online, you were connected to other people who were yeah. freezing their eggs.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah. Okay.
But in different situations.
Or who had.
Yeah.
But again, I hadn't really met, I think it was like one girl who I met who was like my age and froze them due to endo. Mm. And that can make it quite isolating.
Yeah.
Because again, all my friends, you know, most of them have up and moved to Australia mm. or they're, you know, playing gigs every Saturday night or they're on yeah. tour or they're doing all these crazy things. And I'm kind of like, oh, I have to talk about like hormones and pregnancy and egg freezing and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just a bit bizarre.
Can I ask? So you decided to do that, obviously.
Yes, I did, yeah.
And financially, is that something that's covered by the HSE or?
So this is an interesting one. So I looked into different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And from my research and people I talked to, again, I'm no expert,
mm-hmm.
but there were different schemes that were offered that were like, you know, freezing your eggs, but there's obviously waiting lists.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I don't have time on my side.
Yeah.
Because of my disease and the stage it's at. And I think there's also, again, I don't know this for sure, but I'd been talking to people where they were saying you can be offered egg freezing, but you don't qualify if you have like underlying issues.
Right.
Which kind of makes no sense.
Mm.
Because if you have endo, you need to freeze your eggs, but that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that they're way, way more focused on the fertility aspect
yeah.
of it in terms of family planning.
Right.
Rather than something hand in hand with the...
A health issue.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. But again, yeah. I didn't look too far into it. And I was just like, you know what? I don't have time, so I'm just going to go private and yeah. I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
That's
understandable.
Yeah. You know, it was just, I also... gone through the loops going
yeah.
the public route. And I'm very fortunate mm. that I was able to go private. That mm. is a luxury that not many people can afford.
Mm.
And I'm very, very, very blessed because if I didn't, I would still be
waiting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Undiagnosed.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And so, yeah, so I found a place I wanted to go to and I didn't realize, like, it's the whole core. Do you know about egg freezing?
I know a little bit, but I don't know a lot. Yeah, because when I was diagnosed with cancer, they just were like, you don't have time to do it, basically.
Right.
It was over. So I got given a different drug that was called Decapeptyl.
Okay.
Which was like, theoretically, I remember the endocrinologist saying to me, like, I mean, in theory, he was like, do you know what it means? And I was like, oh, well, one of the nurses said to me, it's like your ovaries kind of go into hiding for the duration of chemotherapy. And then the hope is that at the end, they'll be fine.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And he was like, yeah, I mean, there's some evidence that it works. And I was like, oh wow,
that is fertility in Ireland. It's like, well, you know, we think
it might work,
so
worth a shot.
You know, 100% of the time it works half the time, so yeah. I'm just like, what?
But yeah, because I didn't have time to do it, it's not something that I really looked into. I know like a little bit, just kind of anecdotally, but I don't know a lot. So
basically you go in and you go for all these tests. So they do which, may I add, are not covered by the actual price of the egg freezing. You think that you pay this a lot. It ranges from about 2.5k around upwards to like 3.5 per round of freezing. And that's not including all the tests and stuff. So you go in, you have to get blood tests done, you have to get an ultrasound done, you get a thing called an AMH test, which is basically checking the anti-mullerian hormone, I believe it's called, in your bloods, which kind of gives them an idea of how many eggs you produce.
I had that.
A month. And then your AFC count, which is when they do a transvaginal ultrasound, which is basically a lovely probe going in you and seeing your ovaries. And
I did that too.
Yeah.
So fun.
It's, you know what's really crazy to me? I did not expect out of this whole experience how many people will have now seen my vagina. Like, it's just not in a sexual way. Like,
well, if you do end up having children, this will have very much prepared you for that process. Like,
I remember like at first going in and being like, oh God, like, oh, you know, and they're like, okay, undress. And you're like, oh God,
I know.
Now I walk in, I'm like, my pants are already down, like in the door. I'm like, here we go. Let's go, guys. You know,
doesn't even, your feet bother are in me. The stirrups.
No, listen, doesn't bother me. It's nuts. But so they did the test and they basically see how many follicles you have. And I think another thing that massively surprised me was the numbers, the numbers aspect of freezing your eggs. Because you think, oh, you know, I was told I had like 26 follicles.
Yeah.
And I was like, 26?
I'm rich.
26 babies, pop them out. And then I later learned, well, no, not every follicle has an egg.
Yeah.
And not every follicle is big enough. And this whole thing, so you're basically taking injections to like fatten up the follicles to kind of mature the egg in them, so when they extract them they have really good eggs to put in the freezer. So I was kind of like, oh, 26, we're doing great. Like, they didn't really explain that to me, that not all 26 are going to be good. So I was like, great, I can be one and done. So basically with egg freezing, they suggest having about 20 eggs in the freezer for a 75 to 80% chance of one live birth, which is nuts, because I thought like 26, oh my God, I can, I can have a colony of kids, you know, if I really wanted to, but it doesn't work like that at all. Every egg, they say, has about a 3% chance of becoming a live birth. So when you bring that into perspective, you're like, oh, this is actually a lot scarier. And it makes you really think about your life and your, the what you want in the future and stuff. And I think I'd never really thought about kids and stuff until the possibility of it being taken away. You know? So
I do.
They put you on a course of drugs for 2 weeks where you self-inject. And
I saw you say on your TikTok, you were like, my cat has diabetes, so I'm used to giving injections.
So my little Pebbles, she's diabetic, so she gets insulin twice a day. So I knew, and my mom was like a legend at giving her shot every single day. So I was like, you know what? This is going to be grand, because my mom injects the cat. So she can inject me.
Yeah, totally.
So you get all your drugs and it's basically just pumping you full of hormones.
Yeah.
Which is not the most fun thing.
Yeah.
But it has to be done. And so they pump you full of hormones for about 2 weeks and you kind of get intermittent scans. And I remember I went for my first scan and they were just like, okay, cool. So we have 13 follicles. I was like,
what happened to the other 13?
It's like 13. What? That's when I really start to feel, oh, this is not fun. You know, at first I was kind of like, oh, this is just something I'm going to do, and this is a, you know, an interesting experience to have or whatever, and I'm lucky I get to do it. And then when that first number came up, I was like, 13, wow, that just like halved my follicles. And they explained, well, you know, not all of them are going to grow. Not all of them are going to respond to the drugs, whatever. Went back for my next scan. Oh, we're down to 12. I was like, oh, shit, like what? And then we go into the procedure, which is basically you go in, they do not sedate you, which is nuts. They take a massive needle and they put you up in stirrups. It was a very comfy bed. It was like a comfy chair. They had like a little pillow for me. You've got two midwives and you're like surgeon, and then there's a little hatch between the theater and the lab, which is so weird, but they have to get the egg straight away in the lab.
Yeah.
And they put the needle into your vagina, they pierce the vaginal wall and they pierce the ovary and effectively like suck out the follicles.
Wow.
It's so weird. And they just give you like mild sedation, but you're awake.
Yeah.
Which is a bit weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
intense.
It's very intense. Yeah. I was like crying. I was such a wimp, but
no,
like
you poor pet.
It's a lot, you know?
It is a lot.
Yeah. And then I got wheeled back to the thing. And they came back and they were just like, okay, I see. It's interesting. I was like, I wasn't going to share the amount of eggs I got because I didn't know how I felt about it. But I think it is important to share.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing to share.
Well, if you change your mind between now and Friday, you just let me know and we can take it out.
No, I think it's important. So they came back and out of the 12 follicles, they found 10 eggs. And I was still like out of my tree at this point. And I was just like, okay, 10, we're at 10. But they couldn't tell us if they were good enough or not.
Right.
But it turns out that there were 9. So we got 9 in the freezer.
9 good eggs.
Yeah. But, you know, that's still a long way off 20.
Yeah.
So I will be going under another round. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably in the summer.
So this was only last week that this happened.
Yeah, I had the procedure on Thursday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And where it's... What day is it? Monday.
I
never know the day of the week.
Yeah.
It's Monday today. So this is kind of fresh for you. And how are you feeling about it all right now?
I'm actually feeling really good. I think I'm just feeling good because the drugs, like the hormones are kind of out of my system a bit.
Yeah.
I feel a lot more myself.
Yeah.
And I think I'm just happy because I think going into it, you're just constantly fixated on like the number.
Yeah.
And what you're going to get and how many rounds of this am I going to have to go through? And then also, how many do I want in the freezer? Like, am I happy with 20? Am I happy if that only possibly gives me one kid in the future? Or, I mean, it's not promised.
Yeah.
I think I really learned that although egg freezing is an amazing breakthrough in science and fertility, it is a lottery.
Yeah.
It is not an exact science.
Yeah.
And, I think I'm just really blessed and lucky to be in the position that I'm in, that I got to do it and that I'm able to do it
again,
you know.
Why talk about it?
Because having other people talk about it helped me.
Yeah.
And when I was looking for this information on endometriosis and egg freezing, I struggled with, well, I can't find anyone my age with my exact situation. So I'm going to share that for the people who might be that other person in the exact situation. They're looking for someone like me that they can talk to. And from talking about it, the amount of people that I've connected with that have told me their stories, and I've shared, you know, my stories with them or given them advice, or they've given me advice. And, a couple of girls have even come to me being like, because of you, I pushed my doctor and now I have a diagnosis. And that is like, if I have to go through something like a little bit shit, let's be honest.
Yeah.
If I can at least utilize that in some way for some kind of good, selfishly, I'll feel better.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I totally get that.
And it just, you know, I'm a very open person as it is.
Yeah.
And it just... Yeah, I want to share my story so that people who either don't know anything about endometriosis or egg freezing or whatever it might resonate with them, be like, oh, hold on, maybe I should talk to my doctor. Or the people who are currently going through it feel less alone or feel like they can come to me. Like I anytime anyone messages me, I reply straight away.
Yeah.
Because it's something I'm so passionate about, you know? Yeah. I just want to be there for not even just women, but people who are going through this, because I know how isolating it can be.
Yeah. I really relate to all of that. Like, obviously, I kind of had the same feelings about my cancer experience and about lots of my different life experiences. Mm. So I understand it completely and totally. Yeah. And also I understand that feeling of like, I want this to be useful, this thing, you know, this awful experience that I've had. Yeah. Like, let's make it something for good.
But even in a non kind of direct way, like watching your documentary, like, I don't know your feelings towards the documentary now, like, how you feel, because it's what, like, probably like 8 years.
Yeah.
I don't know your full feelings about that now, but even watching that, even though we obviously have very different experiences and different issues that we've gone through, I found such solidarity in that and such relatability into certain things you were saying.
Yeah, that's really lovely to hear. And I don't have any ill feelings about that documentary. I'm really proud of it. I think it was really good. And I still hear from people who watch it, you know, if they get a cancer diagnosis. And I love that it could maybe be a resource for people.
Yeah.
It's not like a how-to, obviously. It's not how to have cancer. It's just my experience. But I think that there's a thing when you've had, I think once you've gone through any kind of health struggle, and particularly I think that specific experience of knowing that something's wrong but not knowing what it is for any length of time, it doesn't really matter if it's the same thing. The feelings around that are the same. I have another friend who was diagnosed with a rare disease, and you know, I really understand her feelings in a way that I just wouldn't have if I hadn't had that experience. And so I think that's the other beautiful thing about sharing, is that there will be people listening who don't have endo, who will never have endo, you know, but who might be a more supportive friend now, or sister or brother or a loved one or parent or child or whatever, you know, to someone. You know, the more information we have about these experiences, the better. I think you're so impressive, and I think it's wild that we're having this conversation and you're also like releasing pop music. So before we go, let's tell the people a little bit about what's coming out from you at the moment.
Well, you know, I'm feeling myself again. I got that endo. I feel like a pumpkin that just got like all the shit scooped out, you know what I mean?
I love it.
What would you call it? Like depulping? I don't know. I feel like a freshly carved pumpkin, and I'm just so ready to take on the world again. Like, once after my surgery, it's like something lifted off me, and I was just writing music again and just feeling so myself. So yeah, I have a new single coming out next week. Oh god, April 4th. And I'm so excited, because I'm like, I'm a dance girly.
Yeah.
I'm a pop girly, you know.
And there's so much electro pop around at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just such,
it's very the moment.
It's such a thriving scene, and like, there's such amazing pop music coming out of Ireland. From just Irish artists as well, like, are just the biggest legends going. And yeah, I'm just so excited to be releasing again, because it's been about a year since I put something out, because I was releasing and then,
well, you've been busy.
Shit just went kind of off the rails. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you've been a bit busy. Got a bit of a left turn. Had a few things going on.
We're back on track. We took the scenic route. Let's put it that way. But yes, my new song, Forfeit Control, comes out next week. And it's kind of about that, this weird feeling of being in your 20s and kind of feeling like all of this stuff is happening to you.
Yeah.
And understanding that you actually just have to kind of give up control and just let it happen.
Yeah.
And it's kind of in a weird way me like reminiscing the almost like loss of my youth.
Yeah.
Because I feel this whole experience has made me grow up a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 26, but still, like, I still feel like a child, thanks COVID. But like, it's made me kind of reflect on my experience in my 20s, and kind of the loss of that, because my life is a bit different now.
I think that that's a perfectly legitimate thing to say. Like, yeah. I can see that you feel a bit weird about saying that, but
yeah.
I think that that is legitimate. You have lost time. Yeah. I feel like I lost time.
Yeah.
Like, I really feel like my sickness, I just lost time.
Yeah.
That I could have been doing other things.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, wasn't really ready to have kids when I had my kids.
Yeah.
But I was told that I probably wouldn't ever have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I had to try then. Yeah. Or, you know.
It just happens to you. Life just happens and to then you sometimes.
I got pregnant. And thank God for that, obviously. Yeah. No complaints there. Like, I was so lucky that despite the odds, I managed to have two healthy kids.
Mm.
But, you know, I did lose a chapter of my life.
Yeah.
And I still feel that now. Yeah. So I don't think that you need to feel weird about saying that. I think that that's a legitimate thing that you've experienced on top of COVID, on top of everything else. But man, you've got some good times ahead of you and I'm excited for you.
I'm very excited. I'm playing. I will have played already when this comes out, I believe, but I'm playing the Ruby Sessions on...
On Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played it last year. Yeah. And it's like one of my favorite gigs. It's so good.
My friend goes every week. She loves it.
It's the best.
Yeah. I actually have never been. I must go. Subi,
I'll shout her out.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah.
Well, look, I wish you all the best. I'm so excited for you. Excited for your next steps. Thank you so much for being so generous with this experience. And for sharing all of that with me. And I'll be watching and listening, obviously.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you are as charmed as I was by Pastiche. She is just brilliant and I think she has an incredible attitude about everything. And I'm just so impressed by the way that she advocated for herself and, you know, managed to finally access the treatment that she deserved. It's really impressive. It's unfortunate that people have to do that, but so often people do. And when they have to do it, I'm just really always happy to hear that they get the results that they need and the treatment that they need. So well done, Pastiche. So before I go, I want to make a few recommendations. First recommendation, guys, is come and see me do a show in the Laughter Lounge. On May 9th, I'm going to be bringing a live podcast show to the Laughter Lounge. Tickets are available now. I will put the link in the show notes. It's going to be loads of fun. I'm really excited about it. I'll have more details about like how it's going to work and who the guests are and stuff as the weeks go by, but I already have some stuff confirmed and I know that it's going to be super super fun, so I really hope that you'll come and enjoy me. I meant join me, but also I hope you'll enjoy me. I mean, please, that is the aim of the game. It is a Thursday night, so not too bad for a night if you want to have a few drinks. And of course, you can come and not have a few drinks and I think you'll enjoy it as well. Get your gang together and I really hope to see you there. Other recommendations that do not involve me. First of all, Marion Keyes has a new book, my friends, and I love Marion Keyes. Like, I love Marion Keyes so much that I'm like nervous when I see her. I'm lucky enough to have met her a good few times. She's so lovely, but like, I kind of don't know how to be a normal person with her because I love her so much. I adore her books. I've been hoovering them up for literally decades now. And every time there's a new Marion Keyes book, I get really excited. I get extra, extra, especially excited if it involves the Walsh sisters, who I feel I know. Like, I mean, the fact that I kind of can't think too much about the fact that they're not actually real people because they are real people because they live in my brain. And this book is Back to the Walshes. It is about Anna, who I absolutely love. She's one of my favorite Walsh sisters. And the book is coming out next month. It's available for pre-order now. So I really, really recommend that you get in on that, get your pre-order, then you'll have it straight away and you can read it. I'm holding it in my hand right now. I actually genuinely, like when it came in, I was like, the fact that I have gotten to a point in my life where I get to read the book before some people, it's just like so unbelievably thrilling. It's here in my hand. Can you hear it? You can have it too. So that's a recommendation. I really enjoyed it. And then I have another book recommendation, which I'm not finished yet, but I just started and I'm really enjoying. It is Close to Home by Michael McGee. It's not a super long book, but it is very, very enjoyable. If you like books that are kind of set in youth culture and nightclubs and like, you know, after parties and stuff like that, you will, I think, really enjoy this. It's about a guy from Belfast who goes to live away, but he ends up coming back. And it's about trying to kind of find your way in life and, you know, figure things out. I suppose I don't want to give too much away, but it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. Close to Home, Michael McGee. It won loads of awards, but I missed it. And then I was sent a press copy over the course of the last week, and I got stuck in, and I'm really enjoying it. So it was winner of the Rooney Prize for Irish Literature in 2023. It was shortlisted for loads of other massive prizes. And yeah, very, very enjoyable. The reviews are incredible if you want to Google them. So there you go. Oh, wait, no, there's one more. I've been watching Boiling Point. If you like The Bear, if you like stressful shows in kitchens, I recommend Boiling Point. It's not as good as The Bear. Nothing will ever be as good as The Bear, but it is very good. And it stars Stephen Graham, who's one of my favorite actors. He's just so brilliant. And it's set in a restaurant kitchen. And it is intense. You may have seen the film. There was a film that came out a few years ago, and there's a TV series now as well. It is available. It came out on the BBC last year. You might have seen it, but it is now available on the RT player if you want to watch it. Have I been enjoying it? I don't even know if enjoying is the word that I'd use, but I think it is good. But it's kind of stressful. So, like, you know, up to you if you're up for that kind of thing. Otherwise, I've been watching Mauricio's show on Netflix. What's it called again? I have it here and I can't even think of the name of it. Million, what's it called? Buying Beverly Hills is back on Netflix. Shh. Sorry, it started playing there. Buying Beverly Hills is the kind of real estate program which features Mauricio, who is Kyle Richards from the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills family. He's her, oh my God, my brain is just not functioning. He is her husband, I apologize. And her daughters all work in the agency, and it's all about that stuff. And it's lovely, fluffy rubbish. But there's also some interesting insights into the whole marriage thing as well. So I've been watching that on Netflix. So there you go. I'm going to go switch my brain off because it's no longer functioning. I really hope that you have a great weekend. If you want more content from me, and I realize I'm giving you a lot, so you probably don't. Or if you just think, hey, she's actually doing a lot of work, maybe I would throw her a few quid. You can join the Patreon, patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemacsharry. New stuff there all the time. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. But if you don't worry. They can't all be wonderful. Thank you so much to Acast and to all my contributors this week. Now, instead of being played out as we usually are by the wonderful Pillow Queens, this week we're going to be played out by Pastiche herself. This is her new single, Forfeit Control. Enjoy. Follow my lead. I'm nothing like you felt before. Out of body, you saved me from the light on the floor. And though we never said it, I think we both knew. I wanna make a million bad decisions with you. Take what you need and make this easy. No one cries forever. We're programmed for pleasure. No one cries forever. No. Searching for territory is unknown, so use your hands to get to know me more. Cried in this club a thousand times, so sick of men and cheap red wine. Take what you need and make this easy. No one cries forever, we're programmed for pleasure. No one cries forever. Kiss me, hold me, touch me like you can't let go.
cause I'm here for one night only.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.